tomorrow night. And, of course, we got a big soiree going tonight. We go to the Revolution Hotline and talk to college football legend who was at the Little Rock Touchdown Club earlier this year, Coach Howard Schnellenberger. Coach, how you doing?
I'm good. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, sir, I can hear you. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you're coming in loud and clear.
All right, well, good. Great to have you. And David Basil reminded me that you were at the Little Rock Touchdown Club earlier this year and wanted to thank you again for making your appearance here in Central Arkansas.
Well, you know, when you play Arkansas State, and got the University of Arkansas right down the road, it behooves a young coach to come in and get acquainted with that audience down there.
Yeah, it's been a pretty crazy month here for us with the coaching change at Arkansas and, of course, Arkansas State naming its
change, huh?
Yeah, pretty wild. And then Arkansas State, of course, named their new head coach yesterday. Harsin coming over from Texas, a guy with the background of Boise State. So let's start with Arkansas. What are your thoughts on Brett Bielema coming to the SEC?
Well, he certainly has had good background to prepare him for that awesome undertaking. Obviously, you got to be a warrior when you walk into the SEC, and particularly at Arkansas, which lies somewhere between Alabama and Auburn, and it's slightly above Mississippi and those other schools. But certainly, he has all the credentials he needs, and now he needs to rally the troops and make them forget about everything that's happened in the last 360 days and look to the future.
Coach, he has an approach, it would seem, you know, with a pro-style offense and a, you know, kind of a hard-nosed defense, it would be similar to Alabama. I guess the big question we have today is, can he out-Alabama Alabama when he kind of gets settled in here and has a couple of recruiting classes?
Well, the only thing you could do is try to out-Alabama, because that's a sure way to win. And they and some other schools have stayed true to their beliefs and have continued to play football from college football from the defensive side of the ball to the offensive side of the ball to the special team. And obviously in the Southeastern Conference, you better be rock hard on defense. You better be able to score when you get inside the what I call the green zone. Everybody else calls the red zone. I don't understand that. But you better be able to score in there two out of three times, and you can't do it without an exceptional defense. And of course, your offense has to be able to score enough to win when the defense is playing winning football.
Howard Schnellenberger joining us in the zone on the Revolution Hotline. He's appearing today courtesy of freesafetext.com. And certainly that's an issue that has been you know, talked a lot about, not only on this station, but I guess all over the country. It's an issue that has you know, certainly plagued America, and there have been a lot of accidents that have been caused by texting and driving. And, Coach, a lot of times we talk about things that have changed over the years. And, you know, for an old coach like yourself, I mean, boy, you talk about the environment and things that coaches today have to worry about. They didn't have to worry about back in the day. That would include texting and certainly Twitter and Facebook and the social media issues.
Well, you're absolutely right. I had to worry about it so much. Not so much the texting while driving, but just the distractions that the smartphones give. You make rules about it, but it's hard to enforce the rules. So I got sick and tired of that. So I just confiscated all the phones on the Friday night before the game, put them in a gunny sack, and put them in the back of the truck until after the game, because otherwise they get calls coming in about 10 minutes before the game, and sometimes some idiots take them out on the sideline. But that's not important. The important thing is we found a way to this app that I represent has found a way to solve the problem of this epidemic that's plaguing this nation. We have the antidote. The antidote is when the message comes into you, you don't hear it. This cell phone will not allow this app will not allow the phone to ring. And that takes away all the temptation that there is out there when you get a phone call, a text message call.
Yeah.
Who is your girlfriend, your girlfriend's mother, maybe your girlfriend's father, maybe another girlfriend, and you want to figure that out. So this, you won't have that temptation anymore.
I need
and
to get
it
that.
Also sends a message back to that senator that I'm driving, I can't talk to you now, but I'll call you as soon as I can. And that's all that people need to know. And then that message is brought to you by Kentucky Fried Chicken, who gives us the financing to give them rewards.
Okay.
They put their phone into SafeSex.
I like that. Well, Coach, my father-in-law, he doesn't text much anyway, but if he did, I'm sure he'd be happy to know that I wasn't texting him back while I was driving. That would make him very happy for sure. So what do you do when you find that there's a kid on the sideline, one of your players that has a phone, and he's got it with him on the sideline? What do you do?
He's spelling.
Yeah. Hardline.
No, you can't have people. It's bad enough to have coaches on the sideline. You know, the NCAA had to come down on that hard when coaches are on the sideline, either texting or calling high school kids. And
really?
That was 5 years ago. That was running rapid. And thank God the NCAA put a stop to that real quick.
Wow. Coach Howard Schnellenberger joining us in the zone. Coach, with all this win now coaching carousel that we've seen, what's your advice to a young coach that's getting into a head coaching position right now with how we've seen it? Just seems like almost every couple of years, if you don't do it in 2 or 3 years, you're out the door. What would you tell a young coach?
Well, you've got to be careful what job you do accept. You have to really be certain that this job is one that you think you can be successful, and you can be successful in a relatively short period of time. It used to be 5 years was a kind of the threshold. Now it seems to be 2 to 3 years the threshold of when decisions are made. But whatever it is, make sure that you have a contract that tells you how much you're going to make over a period of time, what the expectations are, and then what the buyout clauses are going to be. If you do that, then you can go into any situation and know what you're getting into, know what the consequences are of not being successful. But on the positive side, know what the positive things that are going to happen to you in the way of bonuses and things like that should you fulfill your dream.
Howard Schnellenberger joining us in the zone on the Revolution Hotline. Coach, yesterday was 12-12-12, and I guess depending on who you talk to, people made a big deal about that. So there was a discussion, I guess, on one of our other shows about your favorite number 12s over the years. And I guess Joe Namath's name was mentioned, and appropriately so. And that's a guy that obviously you had a relationship with. What are things that stand out to you about being around him, coaching him, and your memories, I guess your lasting memories of old number 12, Joe Namath?
Well, I've had several quarterbacks that have number 12. Maybe it was because of Joe Namath. Maybe it was considered lucky. But most all of them turned out to be very special. Joe Namath was a star before he ever left Beaver Falls. Went up there to recruit him back in 1961. After Nugent couldn't get him into Maryland, and spent about a week up there, and it was obvious when I walked in there and saw him on the street corner of Beaver Falls in a one-button roll, we used to call him Zoot Suit, with a keychain swinging it around like the Fonz. I knew I had something special. State golfing champion, great baseball player, and a quarterback that was recruited by Maryland and Boston College and Penn State. And it was my job to get him to Alabama. I was successful, got a raise, and he led us to a national championship in 64, and then went on to the Jets, where he immortalized the win in Super Bowl III. And predicted the win, and that changed him from a little boy in a mining town in Pennsylvania, Beaver Falls, to Broadway Joe Namath.
What was your pitch to him to get him to Alabama as opposed to some of those other schools that were chasing him?
Well, I promised him that I'd make an All-American out of him, which I knew he could pick anywhere he went.
Yeah.
That he could play for Paul Bryant, the most aristocratic and best college coach in America to this day, still is, and that he will be the first Yankee that ever quarterbacked Alabama, and would be something special for him.
We all know how great of a recruiter you are, and we are big fans of the documentary about the Miami Hurricane football team. And thinking of that, hearing you tell that story about Joe Namath just brings back some of the stories we heard about you going into Miami and recruiting those. What would could you compare in any way kind of recruiting style that you used in those days at Alabama with what you had to do in Miami, resurrecting that program?
Well, it was a lot different down in Alabama. By the time I got there, Brian had been there for 3 years. He had taken a team that had only won one game in 2 years prior to him getting there. But he got there in 58, 59, 60, and 60, 57, 58, 59, and 60, so 4 years prior to 61. By the time I got there, he was banging on the door to win the national championship. And Alabama has always been able to recruit Alabama over Auburn. It fluctuates, determined on how that game comes out each year. But Alabama was the original school. Auburn came in way later, maybe 40 years after Alabama started playing football. So, and they were the liberal arts college. The other one was the Cal College. And so they had everything going for it. So it wasn't hard to recruit in Alabama. When I get to Miami, it was devastated. They had voted to drop out of football, drop to Division I AA. And it was my job to right the ship and get it on the right track. And in order to do that, I felt we had to be able to recruit South Florida. So there's more good kids in South Florida, but none of them ever wanted to come to the great ivory towers of a private school in Coral Gables when they could go to Florida and Florida State and Notre Dame and those other places. So it was my job to kind of put it try to develop a fraternity of South Florida kids. And if we could get all of them to stay together in one wad and be on the same team and not go one, some to Notre Dame, some to Florida, and some to here and there, that we could beat all of those guys. And I was able to get the message through. They believed, and they came together, and they put together the greatest drive, the greatest completion of a dream of any team that ever has been. And as you know, the Miami dynasty now outstretches Bryant's dynasty, with Wilkins' dynasty, and stands alone as having the best team over the longest period of time since before World War I.
Coach, we're going to have to let you go here in a second, but one last question. I was looking through, you got obviously an impressive bio having coached as long as you did. Undefeated in bowl games, and that's something that I think you've got to take a lot of pride in. There aren't too many people that can say that. What was your key for, you know, resting and working, I guess, in that long period of time between the end of the season and the bowl games?
Well, play somebody that's a fast favorite over you. We were an underdog in the double digits in every one of those games.
Wow.
Nebraska game, we were a 17-point underdog. In the game against Alabama, we were something like 14-point underdog. But to get your kids to believe that it took extraordinary people to get to a point where they would be invited to play in those kinds of games, that it was very important to us if we were going to keep the rise of our program ongoing, we had to win the game. So we practiced for that game harder than we practiced for any other game. And I think sometimes when teams have been accustomed to going to bowls, it becomes old hat. And particularly when you're not playing for the national championship in those bowl games, the most hungry team usually wins.
There you go. Well, Coach, we appreciate the time very much. It was an honor to have you on. FreeSafeText.com, check it out. It's a free phone app. And, I mean, honestly, it's not an overstatement. It could help save your life. So get it on your phone today. And, Coach, thanks again for the time. We appreciate it. Have a great holiday season.
Thank you, sir. Take care.
Thanks, Coach.
See you later, bud.
Howard Schnellenberger.
Schnellenberger.
You know, I mean, we didn't even get into all of this, but, I mean, my goodness, the guy built the Florida Atlantic program from scratch. He was the OC on the undefeated 72 Dolphins team. I mean, the guy, it's unbelievable. I mean, he was a huge part of the U story. You could do a 30 for 30 just on him.
He was only at Miami for 4 years. 4 years it took him to win a national championship.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
Just gives you a little idea how much talent there is down there in South Florida. Once he tapped into that, look out.
Hey, Chrissy's going to call in here in a little bit. We're going to talk about some final preparation, some needs and things specifically that